Welcome to episode 17 of Transform Together, the Holisticon podcast meetup. I'm Johannes Schartau, and today I'm talking to Simon Flossmann. Simon is a professional Scrum trainer at Scrum.org and coach for product management. A central topic in Simon's work is evidence-based management, Scrum.org's framework for helping teams and organizations make better decisions based on goals, measures, experiments, and actual value delivered. Simon has described EBM as one of his biggest aha moments, especially because it connects goals, metrics, and real value in the Scrum context. In his training, coaching, writing, and webinars, he uses EBM to help organizations move beyond simply doing Scrum and toward more meaningful conversations about customer outcomes, product value, and whether their way of working is actually helping them achieve their goals. Simon, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, Johannes. Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Crazy. I already said in the introduction that you had a big aha moment with evidence-based management. And I'm always curious when people come here and they have a specific technique or a method that they use, why are they so invested in this? And what did EBM, for example, clarify for you that Scrum alone did not fully clarify?
Yeah, maybe aha moment is a little bit too nicely. It was more an embarrassing moment. So when I started out after university, I basically worked as a product owner sometime. And then I moved into product coaching. I had one of the product managers working with Scrum. And finally, or after some time working together, I could convince him that the notion of finishing all the user stories or tasks be underneath a epic is not a sign for success. So his idea of success was, Simon, our goal is to, we have this huge epic, and if we finish all the stories, then we are done. And basically I could convince him, yeah, maybe, but I think that's not the definition of success. And finally he agreed on and said, okay, Simon, I understand. So finishing all the work underneath an epic, it's not a measure of success, but what is a measure of success? How do I know that we should continue? And what should we continue? And at that moment I thought, damn, I have no clue myself, because before it was always, okay, we finished that epic, then there was another one. So basically, when I was a product owner, the most of the work was driven, let's say, by stakeholder demand or wishes and ideas. So it was a huge pile of epics and work, a huge backlog. And then with this new team, it was more like in a startup environment. There was not so much stakeholder telling what to do, it was more figuring out what to do. And that was a tough situation for me, because at that moment I had no answer. I said, yeah, I don't know, basically. And that was the starting point where I start to try to understand, okay, what's the notion of unrealized value? So what is there out there? Does it make sense to continue? And along that journey, I discovered evidence-based management. I think it was maybe 2017 or something.
So this is what closed the gap for you, something that really helped you. I imagine a lot of people listening might not be familiar with evidence-based management itself. Could you quickly go into what this is and what problem it is trying to solve?
Yeah, so we can tackle it from two sides. So one major problem or a difficult situation for Scrum practitioner is the Scrum Guide mentions something like, I think, like value, the product owner, or the team needs to create value, but it does not actually define what value is. And there are certain definitions and things you can do out there. And I think evidence-based management helps you to get a different perspective on value. So it's not just value. So there are different perspectives on value. So we have current value, the value we're creating at the moment, what is the potential, and how fast we can create value, and how good are we in creating value. These are at least four more perspectives which product people can use to understand the notion of value. So I think that's the problem EBM tries to solve from one perspective. And the other one is, I think it's a little bit from the historical point of view. Ken Schwaber, one of the co-creators of Scrum, came up with the notion of evidence-based management. And in the early days prior to Scrum, when he also introduced Scrum, or what it's called that days, to other companies, he worked a lot in medicine tech, and he was always very impressed how medicine are developed and what scientific rigorosity. And he said, okay, we need to develop software like that. Because at that time, software was, yeah, just build it and then, oh finally we built something awesome.
Yeah.
It's not the way, and it's more like the experimentation thing, which you also see in Scrum. Basically, it's the review. So we build something and then we validate something. And that's the notion of evidence-based management. If you combine it with the notion of value and with these, okay, we build something and then we try to evaluate if it actually creates value, that's evidence-based management in a nutshell. So we're looking about goals, which direction we want to go. We try to describe what value actually means. So what does progress mean? And then instead of having a fixed plan or a gunshot or epic, which we need to complete, we do some kind of, let's say, experimentation step by step and learn along the way and fail along the way. And it's a little bit, well, it's broader than just Scrum. It's applicable to all sort of areas. So basically, I used it for not just for software development, but also for HR, for instance, to help them create more value and achieve their goals.
Now, a lot of organizations, they already use something like KPIs, OKRs, some kind of dashboard, reports, controlling processes. What does EBM add that those things often miss?
So all of those things, I would say, are very helpful. I'm a big advocate in outcome-focused OKRs, for instance. But at the end of the day, most of them are more like, yeah, don't get me wrong, like step-by-step approaches. So if you look at OKRs, so you have a three-month cycle and it has to be written like that and so on. Or if you look at SMART goals, it has to satisfy five conditions and all these kind of things. And there is a place for that. EBM steps a little bit more out and thinks about the overall, how are goals, measures, and behaviors actually linked together. It does not describe how to do it step by step. It more gives you a perspective on those three elements, which are core to, I would say, any type of management. If you think about project, product, companies, whatsoever, at the end of the day, the job of management is create goals, measure if you achieve those goals, and try to influence the behavior of your employees or your customers in a way. So if you have this holistic view, you see, okay, one goal does not cut it. So you need, maybe you need different types of goals. So maybe you have a more strategic direction, a long-term goal, something you want to change in the world. How, what makes you different? What's your playing field? These kind of stuff. And on the other side, maybe you have a little bit more tactical stuff. So what is the team actually doing this week or the teams in this month? So we have different notion of goals, and EBM does not describe how to define those goals, but helps you to think, okay, there are different hierarchies of goals, let's say, and which you need to take into consideration. The last thing I want to mention is it's a framework, and it's more like a minimalistic framework. So if you remove one thing, then it breaks. You can add stuff to it. So for goal setting, you can use OKRs. For team goals, you can use SMART goals. I don't know what for anything else what you like.
There's one thing that I just noticed, because you talked about evidence-based medicine that this approach seems to be inspired by. And I imagine that, I'm not an expert on that, but I imagine that it's kind of more clear-cut maybe, where you can actually directly measure the effect, for example, of any kind of medicine that you develop. Now, in product development, for example, my experience is that it's a lot more messy and things are more difficult to measure. So in this context, what does evidence actually mean? How does it apply? What does it look like in reality?
So if we talk about evidence, so I don't want to go into the notion of scientific evidence. Oftentimes, it's a too much overloaded term. Nevertheless, we have scientific management that goes basically in the same direction. So what I like to call it is like signals. And then we need to think about how strong your signals are, or if you call it evidence, how much evidence do you have? So we have a spectrum. So on the one side, we have actually scientific evidence, but you need to be very careful. Most of the scientific evidence done at university is wrong. And there was a study like I don't know, it's really like 89% of all the experiments are basically are disproven after a year. So yep. You need to be very, very careful on that side. But that's one side, so the scientific evidence. in universities or in medicine. And on the other hand of the spectrum, on the other side, we have your gut feeling. And there is something in between. Okay. And with EBM, we try to, okay, there is something in between. So how can we think about those, what's in between? I can make it very practical. So if you move a little bit away from your gut feeling, so we go out of the building and talk to people, the easiest thing what we can do to increase evidence would be, instead of ranking the feature based on your gut feeling, we could rank the feature based on the stakeholder feelings. It's a little bit more evidence, it's more opinions. That could be one dimension. And then the other dimension, we could rank it on the how much effort it actually for the developers to build those stuff. So we have another dimension. Now, the critical part, what's often missing, is the question, how confident are you in your estimates? It's often missing. So, and like a product managers or salesperson say, I have a customer who expresses he wants to have this feature, or I have a paying customer who already gave us money for us to build it. Yeah. Or if you go on the effort side, yeah, I never did it, but I have a gut feeling it looks like a lot of work. Or basically for another company, we actually built the same thing, so I'm pretty comfortable how to build it. It's a different level of evidence. So you see there is a different notion of how much evidence we have. And to carry out that understanding out, I think that's EBM. And we can make it a little bit more formal later, but I think that's a very helpful way to think in terms of product. So we have effort, we have value, and we have the confidence. It's another dimension. And in confidence, we need to understand what actually does confidence for us mean. So in software development, to get the highest confidence, basically if you ship stuff or if you do A/B testing, I think that's the highest confidence you get. It's the most accurate evidence in terms if actually something is working. And on the other side, we have your gut feeling. And there are steps in between. And to make this explicit, I think that's the job of a product owner. And also here, evidence-based management helps a lot to understand the different kind of confidence.
Do we usually see this applied on a product level or also other levels in the organization?
Yeah, that's so interesting because a lot of people are distinguishing between product and organizational change. To be honest, it's the same thing, at least in my opinion. The only thing what is changing is the notion of a customer. So let's start with product. So what's the goal of product management? Basically, it's to change the behavior of people to buy it, to use it, to recommend it to your friends, whatever. One thing. Now, if you look at organizational change, so what's the goal of organizational change? Change the behavior of not your customer, your employees. So what should they do differently? It's the same question as we look about product development. So what should our potential customer should do differently? What should our employees do differently? At the moment, we have this huge, virus going on about AI strategic transformations. And the question is fundamentally the same. What should your employees do differently now? Should they use more AI? I don't know. we need to influence those behavior in order to create value for the organization, or if you think about product, with our products. So for me, it's basically the same thing. But for organization development, the methods are not so, don't get me wrong, well developed or known. Like if you think about evidence-based management in an organizational context, and we have goals, for instance, we have policies, we have also some kind of nudges, which are evidence-based, you know it from the supermarket. So a supermarket try to nudge you in a certain direction. And we can use the same ideas, which are very evidence-based in organizational development. So we want to change the behavior of our people. We have rewards, all these kind of things. So I think it's the same idea. The behavioral change, the method might be a little bit different. We don't just build feature, we also build other stuff.
What I would like to look at next is, what does that look like in practice, for example, for a Scrum team? As you know, I co-wrote a book about how a lot of teams struggle applying Scrum, and I always have like a very different understanding of what, for example, a sprint review could look like. Or a colleague of mine and me, we often, when we speak at conferences, we ask people if they use sprint goals and how they arrive at their sprint goals and how many people actually use product goals. And I could imagine that this is something where EBM really comes in, because in my experience, a lot of teams struggle to define what success is, or they kind of maybe read that there is some kind of product goal that is that they're supposed to have, but they don't really know what that looks like. Is this an area where EBM can help?
Yes. So in EBM, we call it intermediate goal. I think that's the best describes product goals. It's a product goal typically, at least for most organizations, which are a little bit larger, are not strategic themes. Okay. And so they're underneath the company strategy, I would say. And so what can we learn from EBM in terms of setting product goals? First, we need to distinguish what success looks like. So at the end of the day, now for organizations, success looks basically increase profit, to make it oversimplified. So what goes into profit? So we have revenue, we have costs, and these kind of things. So if you would, this would create the most evidence if you're successful. Assume you build a product and you can create more profit. Awesome. You won. You have evidence that you do the right thing. It's working. Now, this is often hard and not easy to influence and very lagging. So what we tend to do is, now let's focus on what we actually can do. Okay, a product goal could be, let's build this feature, ship this product, whatsoever. And now we have a gap between the impact, create revenue, and actually what we are doing, shipping stuff. And I think a good idea to increase the likelihood that we actually create impact is to focus on customer outcomes. So the change of behavior, it provides a little bit more evidence that it's actually working. But it's in the realm that teams actually can influence it. So the new feature, so if you ship the new feature, we expect that people are using it 50% more of the time. Our application, for instance, because everybody was waiting for the new AI chatbot functions on the website. That's what we believe. And so as before, we see again, so different types of evidence. So the most evidence that something is working would be increased revenue, for instance, if we could hit that target. Much less evidence would be we just ship a thing, then we just learned that we actually can build the stuff, but it does not move the customer. So I bet a little bit more evidence would be on focusing on customer outcomes. And that's, again, evidence-based management thinking in terms of product management.
Yeah, great. And in my work, when working with teams, for example, I noticed that I come to categorize the type of sprint review that people have in the three broad categories. And one is essentially they talk about, are we sticking to the plan? And the iteration is kind of like, are we still in the big project plan? We finished something. What does that mean? Then another type would be of stakeholder feedback. So we show something to someone often inside the company and we want their feedback and they kind of give a thumbs up or they say, maybe change this. And then the third type is much rarer, which is we actually talk about outcomes. So we talk about what effect have we created? What can we measure? So it sounds like exactly what you just mentioned, that this is kind of something that you would be driving for using EBM. Yes. And then in this way, a sprint review would maybe transform more in that direction. Is that correct?
Yes. So if you as a product owner starts thinking about what actually value is, then exactly you make those steps, what you said. So I think the best notion in terms of value is if you think about customer behavior change, this is the best indication for value, which is also influenceable. And you're totally right. And I think for a lot of organizations, that's not a bad thing. That's how things evolve. But what you described, the first level or the first type of sprint review, it's more like, sometimes we call it project thinking, but I think it's not a bad thing. Projects are not a bad thing. The thing is, it's what we assume. Like we assume if we can build this stuff, then it actually will work and customer will be satisfied. And the biggest fear or problem or risk we see, can we actually build this thing? Which for a long time was really difficult for software teams. Okay, that was the major problem. Can we build these type of stuff? If we can, then people will buy it. So that was the given. But I think nowadays it changed a little bit that actually building stuff is not so much the problem anymore. It's more about, okay, we can build stuff, but does it actually improve the lives of our customer? Are they actually find the product? Are they actually using it? Are they find it helpful and so on? That's the main risk nowadays. So we moved a little bit away from actually building stuff on time and budget. It's more about, okay, the risk is there's so much competition from the other, I don't know, companies and products. Are they actually using our stuff? I mean, that's the basic problem with the German automotive industry at the moment. So we can build cars, but are there actually people who are buying the cars, or do they buy Chinese cars or whatever? That's the major problem. But don't go into automotive stuff.
No, let's just pretend nothing is happening.
Yeah. Awesome.
Do you have any kind of favorite example of working with an organization or a team and they created some form of evidence and then they changed their approach or their behavior as a result?
Yeah. So first and foremost, working evidence-based, it's really uncomfortable. So to be honest, now that you see the same thing with being busy, it's great. Everybody sees, oh, Johannes is so busy. He must be so helpful for the organization and so on. Okay, that's the easy part. The hard part is to commit to a goal, because committing and focusing to a goal actually means it might show you very early that you're on the wrong track. And that's difficult. So we decide to do something and now we learned after 1 week that it's actually not working. It's a failure, which is really hard to admit. Okay, we focused on something, we learned early that it doesn't work. So everybody knows we are failing, which is an unpleasant situation, at least for most teams and most organizations. So we need to, okay, that's a given. So even if you frame it as an experiment, it's still, you suck. It didn't work, so you failed. So that's the fear we need to overcome. And now, the moment we start now measuring with more data and more evidence, it gets even harder, because now you actually know you're not just busy, but you do not create any meaningful impact, which is really hard, which is for a lot of teams, it's really difficult. So we need to be step by step. So let's say we think about, okay, we want to introduce OKRs, outcome-centric OKRs. But I also say at the beginning, maybe you have some output in the OKRs as well. Okay, in order to, okay, we build something, we don't know if it actually moves the needle, but actually we build something. That's the first step. And over time, we add more evidence to it. So not just building stuff, but do we change the customer behavior? Do we actually create impact? And I have an example for that, which I can talk a little bit about. They call it a complex product, but actually it's a combination of hardware and software parts. And which needs to be installed in their, for their customer, into their organization. It's a very complicated system. And in order to sell these kind of complicated systems, you need to convince your own sales people to actually advocate for the new features. Okay, otherwise, if the customer do not buy the new add-on features, the stuff will never be used. Now, we can now think, okay, this feature is so great, our sales rep will actually show it to our actual customers. Yeah, that's wishful thinking. That's gut feeling. So then we set a goal. Okay, but what did we have? I'm not sure if it's 100% correct. Sales rep attend our sprint review at least 3 out of 4 sprint reviews and ask for new feature stuff, or want to try out new features. So that was for a 3-month period. At the end of the day, no sales rep did ever show up. Yeah. That's hard. So you actually failed. So we built something, but we cannot even convince our own sales person to show it to our customers. So actually we created a lot of costs. It's short, it's a failing. Now, if you have it very early, it would be easier to hide there in 15 years, everything will be okay. No, it won't. And evidence-based management and goal setting is really a struggle at the beginning. So
there's something I noticed because it feels like we have a similar approach. I'm a big fan of making things measurable and in creating confidence or evidence.
Yeah.
And something that I noticed is that at some point it kind of plays into a question of leadership.
Yeah.
So it often sounds very appealing to organizational leaders to be more evidence-based. And then I also noticed that once you create an environment in which people actually work that way, some fear that there's a bit of lack of control, because in the past they used to be able to just go in and like, this is my opinion, this is what we have to build. And now maybe as a leader, for example, I have to justify show my assumptions. And then if there's a topic that I care deeply about, then suddenly it's position 12 in the product backlog instead of me wanting it at number one.
Yeah.
This podcast is also kind of therapy for myself, but also I'm kind of outlining my struggles and just hoping that someone can help me. So how do you handle these situations? I'm sure you're nodding, so I'm assuming you have seen this before, but do you have the perfect solution to dealing with moments like that?
Yeah, I have the perfect solution on how to get fired.
Great.
Get fired as a product coach. it's really simple. Now, SHA, it's like was a couple of years back, and there are a lot of stakeholder wishes from all different area departments of the company. What we did is, okay, we built this stuff for you, totally fine, but actually, how do you know that it's actually successful? So if you build this widget on the website, so what should be changed? And we tracked those answers, so we made an additional column. So in our sprint backlog, we had the traditional, typical to-do, done, and so on. And behind shipped, we had, I'm not sure what's the actual name was, maybe validated or something like that. And then we wrote down what the person actually said. Or we looked at some, it was a website, so we looked at some analytic stuff. Are people actually using it to a certain extent and so on? And then we made a marker. I think it was 8 weeks. So, and after 3 sprints or so in the review, we come back to that feature. We said we shipped it a quarter ago, and now let's look at the data, what we actually get it, or people, of if people are using it, and it actually moves the needle, as you said. Boy, that's the easy way to get fired. it never did. That's not just us or different companies. I think there were a lot of study done by, I think it was Microsoft who published a paper on that, that I think only 8% of the stuff what they're actually shipping has a meaningful impact on their key metrics. And it's crazy. So that's the game.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, that's the game. So you can look it up. It's a paper about A/B testing, I guess. It's really interesting. And that's the reality. And the evidence part here is that's the Scrum thinking also here. You have to make this transparent. So product management is a game of guessing with very high risks. It's really costly, and therefore we need to make this transparent to actually, that's basically the retrospective, to learn how to we actually improve our development process. A lot of teams are sitting together and talk about their feeling. I'm not a big fan of that. It's more about, okay, we built something, we learned something, how to incorporate these kind of learning in our development process. So how can we make sure that earlier we can somehow validate if it's a good idea, even if it's hard to say to our stakeholder, yeah, I don't think that's a good idea. We won't build it. So how can we work with them together to actually build something that at the end of the day, they move the needle better than 8%, which would be remarkable.
You just hit on a couple of key things. One is that I always come back to the fact that essentially what we want to install in organization is kind of this learning loop.
Yeah.
And some people, for some reason, take offense to this, or I've heard people kind of criticize this idea, but I'm still, it always comes down to this. And for me, there are 3 steps in that. And one is kind of create the evidence or create some kind of form of visibility, transparency. The other one is that you then have to start interpreting what is happening. And the third one is that you actually have to act on what you have learned, and then you kind of create complete that learning loop. You just mentioned a couple of things in there, but how do you help teams and organizations go through this process so that it's not just, for example, a heap of useless evidence that no one looks at, or a lot of maybe we shoulds, you know, like we talk about maybe oh, this isn't working. Maybe we should do something else, but then nothing happens. And how do you guide people through the entire thing where in the end we have meaningful action and there's this constant learning and acting on evidence?
Yeah. So if you have an answer to that, next month I have a workshop where actually I need to figure it out or not. So we can think of it from a cultural organizational perspective. So in order to learn, I think you're familiar with that, we need to create, I don't know how to call it, some kind of learning culture, which actually starts with appreciation, open to feedback, receiving feedback. Mm. It starts for very micro stuff. And it was oftentimes really hard for developers to admit they're wrong or provide helpful feedback, take feedback. That's on a micro level. On the other side, so really tactical, I always hope that if I make a good job to present facts which are given and do not blame somebody, people are smart enough to draw their own observations and make the next steps. And I think that's the hard part. So how can we provide data where people can look at it and without being offended, figure out what to do next? I think that's hard because oftentimes we provide data which is hard for people to admit. So, okay, the last sprint you were not here, for instance, which is it's very aggressive. So that's the first thing. And then how to follow up on change. I think I will quote something from your book. It's the snowball metaphor, where change starts with a small snowball, and then if you stop rolling, it gets bigger and bigger. I think that's always my strategy. Okay, so what is the thing we can do until tomorrow or next week? And how can I follow up with you and help you? It's not about controlling you. It's about maybe I can assist you a little bit. And for coaching perspective, this is always my stance, which is actually not coaching at all. It's how can I help you? Let's make it together. So it's going together through the struggle. That's what I try, which is basically not coaching, but it's like working together. So how can we, I don't know, try to change the code base or go to a manager and talk about this? Let's do it together. So it's more like the community aspect of change, which is not the basic coaching aspect. So that would be one thing. What I try to do is do it with people together, which is actually really hard as an outside consultant. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan at looking at the boundaries of any approach that we have. I'm noticing that anytime there's something new, we run the risk of people going, oh, this is going to solve all of our problems and we'll just use it for everything.
Yeah.
Is there anything specific that people should not expect from EBM?
Now, so EBM is based on the idea like Scrum. It's your mother-in-law. It doesn't tell you how to do stuff. It just tells you you are wrong. Fix it. And that's the same thing with evidence-based management. So we have these four key value areas. We have current value. And the thing is, I mean, I can ask you, does your product, if you're working on products, actually delivers value right now? And to be honest, not so many people can answer those questions. Yeah. So do you actually know the user base or how much money do you make and these kind of things? And most product owners, I don't know. So how do you actually decide if you should fix this bug or build this feature? How do you do it? And that's what evidence-based management shows you. And what's the downside of it? It does not provide you a approach, method, on how to solve this problem.
Right.
I'm looking for it. So, yeah.
Once we find it, we'll let everybody know. Okay.
Yeah. and for okay, some areas and products also, it's developed, let's say, like current value and unrealized value in terms of conversion funnels for, I don't know, let's say software products on websites. It's pretty, there are steps you need to follow in order to understand the situation.
I'm sold on EBM. I'm fully bought in. Why is this not already the default way that organizations manage products? What are you noticing that kind of keeps people from using this, or what have people used in the past and why?
Data is not very inspirational. And I believe people do not follow logic or data. They follow people. And we always tend towards the leader and not towards the data. Everybody talks about, yeah, we should be equal, and there shouldn't be any hierarchy, and it's bullshit because we need hierarchy in order to feel safe. So there is a leader. Oh, I follow him, and then I'm safe. We are scared, like from a nature perspective, and we are not really good in surviving. So we need a person who tells us what to do, which we can follow. And this is really hard. And organizations have these hierarchies and leaders which are inspirational, and evidence-based management is a little bit the opposite, so it's conflicting. By the end of the day, I think we need both. We need good leaders who show us the vision, inspire us, but their decision-making is grounded in evidence. It's not purely evidence-based, but they're actually using evidence. But we need to admit that we need leadership. So I think there will never be a company which is also only run by scientific evidence. It's, yeah, maybe with the future of AI. Yeah, hopefully right. Not. But so that's a given. We need leadership, which makes it hard. Because is there no evidence in an organization? They are purely to leadership. So I have one customer who drives me crazy. There's everything is done via attendance of meetings. Like that's the default decision-making process. So the more status you have in an organization, the more meetings you run, basically. And if you have lower status, you need to attend. So you are CC on every email, you just attend the meetings, don't say nothing. It's really these tribe-driven leadership stuff. It's totally the opposite, or like with evidence or something. It's about you need to be there in order to be seen. It's crazy. So, and I think a lot of product decision can be done without attending meetings and just look at the data.
Now let's imagine someone is listening and wants to try out evidence-based management. How do they get started instead of like installing the entire thing at once? Is there one small step that they can take, or one small experiment that can run to get started?
Yeah, it's the Fight Club. Never tell that you are in the Fight Club. Don't. I mean, that's the number one mistake. Maybe not. A lot of people, I see the mistake. So they learn something and then they immediately try to apply it onto their team and organization, and then use the new language. And everybody says, whoa, what a minute. Hold on a minute. What's that? So don't use the language. Just use the ideas. So the first idea is, do we actually have a goal? And you have a goal. The question is it explicit? Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, there are non-explicit goals. Maybe that's just some measurements people were measured by, which are the goals. Like, you need to be here from 9 to 5, and that's your goal. So make goals explicit. And it doesn't need to be perfect, but you need to look at what are the goals. That's the first thing. And then the next thing is what you can do. So how do we actually achieve those goals? Is there a plan, step-by-step process? Are there some check-in, milestones, and these kind of things? Maybe that's a starting point. So how can we not think of it? There's a five-step process, and if we follow it, then we are successful. So let's change the language a little bit. We believe that if we do X, Y, Z, then we will be successful. Success for us means... Now you start a little bit with an experiment. It's not too much, but so you can think of product backlog items. We believe we should build this feature. If we are successful, then we would drive more conversion, for instance. All right. Now you start a little bit more experimentation, and the last step is now add data to it. And don't call it evidence-based management. Yeah.
Simon, thank you so much for your time. If people want to learn more about you, you have a Substack, for example. Where can people find you?
Yeah, I have a Substack which is called Scrum with AI, but it's basically evidence-based management. So I'm trying to answer the question, which I find very interesting. So we had Scrum, then we used SAFe. Now we have AI. How do we actually know that it's working? And that's the answer is, how do we measure success? And that's evidence-based management. So I circle around the topic a lot. Maybe that's a starting point, or on my LinkedIn, I also share sometimes some posts.
Great. We'll put all the links in the show notes. Thank you so much. I hope this session has given you some concrete ideas for your own transformation challenges. At Holisticon, we provide companies with holistic support from strategy and technology to organizational change. If this sounds interesting, please feel free to contact us. You can find all the information you need at holisticon.de, and don't miss our next Transform Together session. See you then.